You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardner, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I convinced them I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized there was something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party they gonna have out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And, folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
I am pumped up, brother. Pumped up is not the word. I'm just jazzed, Marco, and I think you know the reason why.
Absolutely.
I was getting shrills down my backbone there for a minute when you did that little titty on the movie, and where it said how I got into this crazy business was because of the subject that we have tonight about the Patterson film. And, you know, it's not just me. I'm sure it's countless hundreds, maybe thousands of others around the globe who was tweaked into this industry by seeing that film and determining, well, you know, am I going to be the next one out there to try to find one of these things and discover it? Is it a foreign race of people that we never knew of? Was it the missing link? I can just tell you this, Marco, and our listeners around the globe. This was, yes, got me into this industry. But I've had a problem all my life while I was chasing this thing, while I'm looking for it still till today. Why is any of the encounters that I've had or the sightings that I've had of this creature, which has been seven in my tenure of over 40 years, ladies and gentlemen, none of them looked like the Patterson's creature. Why do you think that is? I'll tell you the reason why. After going through all of this all these years, and thank God I know that there is an unknown primate out there roaming these woods of the United States and around the globe. I know that personally. My team knows that personally. But here's the thing that's bothered me. When we found out how this hoax was perpetrated on the public all over this world, ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't going to stay silent. In the beginning, I was. I shut up. I didn't say nothing. Our scientists, our anthropologists, our historians, our so-called cryptozoologists ran the muck, ran it amok. They rode this money trail and this financial wheel for 45 years, ladies and gentlemen. They sure as hell did. They got on the shirt tails of that movie and that man and the people who perpetrated this hoax all these years. Well, we're not going to do it any longer. All we're going to do is put this thing, we put the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, ladies and gentlemen, together. My good found friend, John L. Johnson, who's been duped a ton, just like we have, just like so many other people have. And I've always said it, you haven't looked for Bigfoot unless you were hoaxed yourself. And my God, I've had enough of that myself happen to me, as you know, with countless hundreds of thousands, past over millions of dollars now. But you know what? Enough is enough. We're putting together something here, ladies and gentlemen. You saw the trailer. It's up there at searchingforbigfoot.com, bigfootlive.com. You see it. It's right there. When you see the movie, it's going to blow your minds. And all we're doing is we've gathered this evidence, ladies and gentlemen, of all these conspirators. And some of them are going to blow your mind. The ones that you think are holier than thou are in this movie. And when you hear and when you see it with your own eyes and ears, it will blow you away. Now, I'll tell you this, the people that are on this show tonight, I've listened to all the stories, all the bullshit. Oh, they're inconsistent. Oh, they're whacked out. They're not whacked out. They are the ones that came to the front and exposed it. They are coming forth. You'll see them in this movie. You'll hear them. And you're going to hear it firsthand. And there's going to be some of that told to you tonight. I'm going to tell you straight up. All those people that have rode this financial wagon for profit for 45 years and have duped all of us, including myself. We've been duped, ladies and gentlemen. And I just got to say this. What about these so-called educated people, these scientists, these PhDs that are teaching our kids in college, these self-proclaimed cryptozoologists? These people are teaching our kids, our grandkids. All for what? For the mighty dollar, ladies and gentlemen? They've shut their mouth to ride it for 15 minutes of fame? This film is going to open the eyes from a lot of people around the world. What do you think about that, Bill?
I think you're absolutely right. As you know, I've been along with you for the past, what, 5 or 6 years. We had the anniversary show that started it out. And some of our guests that are on here tonight were on the anniversary show. And that's quite some time ago. And we brought it forth then. There's more now than ever before of what actually took place. And there's the actual evidence that shows how it took place. So I think you're right.
And that's the key. And that's the key, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the whole thing started me off in this thing on going out and meeting with the actual people. It was a guy who wrote this book. His name is Greg Long. He's become a friend. Great guy. But more so than being a friend and a great guy, he's an investigative reporter, a writer. And boy, does he know his stuff. He's our first guest. Without any further ado, let's get out there to Washington. Greg Long, are you out there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Listen, Greg, I got to tell you, you probably hear it in my voice tonight. I am stoked. And not many people know what that means unless you're over 60 years of age, and I think you know what that means, my brother.
Yeah, I certainly do. You know, you're quite excited, Tom.
Well, I am. I am, Greg, because you've seen the trailer. We've put these pieces of this puzzle together of all this film that we've taken, and I've got to tell you, when you see it, like we've seen it, like Johnny and I have seen it, it's crazy, and it's just it's brokenhearted, especially in my arena, because I believe so much in this damn film. And then when I found out the whole truth, as you did, and there's going to be so many other people around this globe, they're going to be disappointed too, aren't they?
Well, unfortunately, they are. You know, like you, Tom, I grew up with the Patterson film. In the respect that it would appear on and off on television, it always had a mysterious quality to it. You had this this jerky piece of film taken realistically as possible out in the woods of Northern California by ostensibly an honest man, and it was always replayed as I grew up through my adolescence, and you know, I would see it during my adulthood. But you know, you kind of grow up after a while and you start to ask some questions. Is it real? Who is the man who shot this film? What's the background of when, where, why, how, and so on and so forth? The key journalistic questions you do ask about any story. And I set out to look into it. You have to verify whether it was true or not. And I was just absolutely stunned to find out that it is indeed a hoax. And I'm sure it really shattered your views, Tom, because, you know, I've talked to you personally in my home for quite a few hours on the phone.
You know, before you go any further, Greg, I got to tell you something where it hit hard to me. You know, at the beginning of the top of the hour, you know, they had that little titty on my movie. And,
right.
And said, that's how I got into this damn business. And it's the truth, okay? And like I said at the top of the hour, Greg, how many other people, hundreds, maybe thousands, countless numbers around the world did the same thing as I? Whether it be an armchair a researcher, a weekend warrior, or somebody who's done it full time like myself, and the thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that have been spent. And thank God, and I'm going to say it again, thank God, that I've had those encounters along with my team, but I always had that thing in the back of my head, Greg. Why is it that out of the seven different creatures I've seen around this country, none of them look like the Patterson film?
Well, that's the problem because, you know, Tom, you along with many other witnesses have seen Bigfoot, and I wish I could see Bigfoot. I really wish I could. But, you know, I've talked to you and I've talked to others who have witnessed Bigfoot, and they are sincere people. I don't doubt the truthfulness of what they're reporting. But the problem with Bigfoot sightings is that once they're captured on film, they either fall into one of two categories, in my opinion. They're either so blurry and out of focus and of poor quality, you can't ascertain exactly what you're looking at. Or if they're extremely clear, the clear ones have a problem. Many of them have a problem. Because this creature is so elusive, it's so mysterious, it's so fleet of foot, it resists capture, it resists being, you know, shot, killed, inspected, that you have to be skeptical when you see, you know, a clear picture of Bigfoot. And if you do, you need to look at the photographer. I think that the film, you know, as interesting as some of these films are, you really have to look at the photographer and ask that photographer, tell me the full story. I want to know about your background. I want to know your history. And you get the information about these photographers through their friends and their relatives and people who can, you know, vouch for their sincerity and truthfulness. Unfortunately, with this one film that's supposedly stood the test of time until now, the personality, the character of Roger Patterson was never examined by anybody.
Good. Hold on. Let's on the other side of the commercial, let's talk about that. Marco, let's go to commercial.
Okay, here we go.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
Back to you, Tom.
You know, Greg, I got to tell you, that was a very apropos you put that in there that way, Bill. This was about the hoax that gripped the world about the two cops from Georgia in 2008. That's not going to be a fat tick on a hound out there compared to what the hoax of the century is going to be. Here's what I'd like for you to do, if you would be so kind, Greg. I want you to tell the people in the Bigfoot world out there that have their ears on and the people around the globe right now about that person real briefly. And that person being Roger Patterson, okay? And tell him.
Okay.
Because everybody thinks that this guy is an icon. He was holier than thou, and we're going to put him up there like the Pope.
Well, let me first recommend to anyone out there who has not read my book to please get a copy of it, The Making of Bigfoot, published in 2004. And much of what I'm going to tell you is in that book, but I'm going to try to boil it down and make it as simple as I can for you. Roger Patterson was a chronically unemployed schemer and planner and dreamer, is the best way to put it. He resisted working for a living for anybody. He declared many times he didn't want to work for a living. But he had to survive in some way. The way that he survived was by conning people. Now, we know for a fact, even from the lips of the great Rene DeHinden, who, if you know your Bigfoot history, was one of the early Bigfoot hunters, one of the fathers, so to speak, of Bigfoot. He himself admitted to me in an interview that Roger Patterson committed mail fraud. Roger Patterson published a book called Does America's Abominable Snowman Really Exist? And he published a book. He would sell the book, receive checks, but not mail the book to anyone. Okay, that's one example. Other examples include unpaid bills, checks that bounced, people attempting to sue him ripping off people in any way he could from neighbors, for example, using their telephone for personal calls related to Bigfoot, walking out the door and leaving his neighbor with a $700 telephone bill. The man was broke. He had to get money, and the only way to do it was to cheat people. He was a con artist. He was a rip-off artist. And he simply worked outside the basic fundamental honest principles of hard-working people. He's what you would call today a sociopath. He loved to break the rules. Simply put, Roger Patterson was a man who was desperate to make as much money as he could. He was suffering from cancer. People ought to know that. He did have this disease, which came and went. But he needed to make a living doing something, And the word is from a number of people that he wanted to leave something behind for his family. And the only way to do that, I'm talking about financially, was to make, as he said, $1 million. And he said, I'm going to make $1 million once he took this film of Bigfoot, this alleged film of Bigfoot. He died broke because much of this money was taken from him by his brother-in-law, L.B. Attlee. But nonetheless, he lived from scheme to scheme. And that's probably the best and most simple way I can put it to you, Tom, is that he simply was a con artist.
You know, Greg, let me interrupt you one more time. Some of the stuff that's going to be out in the film, thanks to you, were these court documents.
Yes.
That blew me away, and of course it blew John away. He just couldn't believe what we saw. But these are documented court documents stating what?
Well, he was arrested for theft. He never returned the camera that he used down in Bluff Creek. It was a 16-millimeter camera. He never brought it back. The owner of the camera shop insisted that he bring it back, contacted him over and over to the point where he finally had to notify the sheriff, the Yakima County Sheriff, that this had been stolen from him. They did arrest Roger Patterson. There were some procedural things that went on in court about how to deal with Roger Patterson. Ultimately, a suit against him or charges against him were dropped. The camera has never been found. There's indications that he sold it. There's indications that he threw it away. There's indications that, you know, it somehow just vanished. But that's a fact. He was arrested for theft. Second of all, documents show that he wrote exclusive contracts for the rights of his film to multiple independent TV producers behind the backs of each one of them. In other words, he'd write, sign a contract, I'm going to give you exclusive rights for X dollars to contractor A or movie producer A. He'd turn around and ask movie producer B to sign a contract, make exclusive rights with that movie producer, and so it goes. So he was a dishonest man in that regard. Third, he was constantly being hounded by creditors. He didn't pay his bills. He wouldn't pay his bills. He committed mail fraud, as I just indicated. There's enough in the public record to show that he was this unsavory character. He was a shadowy, shady man. He was what you would call, as I indicated, a sociopath, which, by the way, is one step below a psychopath. A psychopath usually murders people. Roger Patterson just cheated him. You know, this whole picture of Roger Patterson being this lucky, adventurous Bigfoot hunter, this pioneer in Bigfoot investigations, is blown away completely when you get down and look at the public record and you talk about him with his friends and his neighbors who knew him intimately. They saw every day what he was doing. So that's the picture of Roger Patterson. You need to wipe out of your mind if you still have, you know, in your soul some sort of idealistic, romantic view of Roger Patterson as being this trailblazer and broke new ground with Bigfoot investigations. It was a plan that he had set forth. He put it together. He was filming, putting together a documentary film, if you will, of Bigfoot, of which Bob Aronimus, who I think you're going to have on, was participating in, along with some other cowboys. His whole intent was to sell it to Hollywood. He went down to Hollywood trying to sell the film. He was unsuccessful in getting investors. He finally needed a Bigfoot. He conned a woman named Vilma Radford out of $700 plus interest in order to buy the suit. And it's all fully detailed in my book, and I want to give you all the details because I think, you know, I'd like to have your listeners read it and, you know, make up their mind for themselves. But I came away after 4 years of investigating this with a picture of Roger Patterson that completely blew out of the water any sense that I personally ever had that this was a lucky cowboy down in Northern California who stumbled across Bigfoot that day. He was not a lucky cowboy. He planned it out, he plotted it out, he schemed it out, and he pulled it off. The entertainment industry has been the driver over the last 45 years to push this film for one purpose, to make money. And they've covered up this fact about Patterson successfully for all these many years until Tom Viscardi came along to put all the pieces together properly. And I'm going to be quite excited to see this film because I know you've interviewed other people. I want to see who those other people are. I know some of the people that are going to be in the film, and I'm sure you have many others. And I just want to compliment you, Tom, for going through this effort to do this, because I know you're fighting against a mindset of people who simply hang on to this thing, and they're hanging on for it for several reasons. It's a blind religion for them. It's an icon they don't want to give up. Or number two, it's money. That's basically why they keep hanging on.
And boy, have you hit the nail straight away on the head. Greg, I'm going to tell you some of your – and here's another question. It just came in over here on my emails here. People are saying, what's with the story, Greg, about all of them living so close? Patterson, Gimlin, Hieronymus, and Vilma, and the brother-in-law. Those five are the ones that were right involved with that whole thing, weren't they?
Exactly. They're neighbors, or they're bound together in some cases through marriage ties. For example, Aldi Attlee is married to Roger Patterson's youngest sister. Okay, so there's a connection there. That's why Aldi Attlee often bailed Roger out by handing him out money when Roger came around begging for it. This is all in my book. There's a long, detailed, and very interesting chapter. I interviewed Aldi Attlee personally. He told me what he thought about Roger Patterson. He had firsthand knowledge of him. He knew he was an unemployed bum, as he called him, who came around begging for money because he didn't want to work for a living. So Aldi Attlee supported Roger Patterson on and off, mostly to please his wife, who was Roger's youngest sister. That's the connection there. Plus, Aldi Attlee wanted to make money himself. He's retired now, but on the board of Superior Asphalt Paving Company, which is a major asphalt company in the West, he's a multimillionaire, but he cashed in on this as well. And he gave me an interview telling me specifics about how he promoted the film. He traveled with Roger across the country. And a great deal of money was made from it. He kept most of it.
You know, I don't know if I asked you, but I'm going to ask you now. Did Attlee say that he and Patterson and Hinden viewed that film in his basement?
Yes, and that's what's so fascinating about it.
Ladies and gentlemen. Listen closely. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is amazing. This film was supposedly taken on October 20th, 1967, a Friday. Within 48 hours, it's being shown. It's already been processed, that's another side issue, which we don't want to go into right now. But it's been processed, delivered, and in the hands of Aldi Attlee and being shown in the basement of his home and gathered around him on this Sunday. That would have been on the 22nd of October. He has Rene DeHinden, John Green. Of course, Bob Gimlin is there, who's Roger's sidekick. And I don't recall, you probably have... Your memory might be a little bit better about that time, some other people that are present. But they rushed down from Canada, a lot of them, to Yakima, Washington, and there they are viewing this film. I kind of go, why is it being shown in Aldi Attlee's home? What involvement did he have in this? He was a financial backer. He was interested in pushing this. He wanted to make money out of it. The whole thing, of course, Tom, is money. It's just a business. It became so blown out of proportion that this thing has taken on this aspect of, what would you call it? I don't know what to call it, Tom. It doesn't deserve how it's been treated. I mean, it's simply...
You hit the nail again, once again, and you're very astute about this whole thing. You know, you're an author, you're a writer. Here's a question I'm going to pose to you, and then we're going to have to get the other guests on the line. You're such an interesting guy. And by the way, Bill, please put... the cover of Greg's book on the website, and I want let everybody know to buy this thing before the movie comes out, because this is always good, like all the other movies that are out in the theater. Get the book first, then see how it comes up against the thing that's going to be in film. So, Bill, after the show, get with Greg and get all that information. I want to.
I got it already. I mean, it's in the. The book is on many of the different selling lists. Is that what you want me to put
on there? We have the front cover of it, Bill.
Say again?
Do we have the front cover of his book on
our
website?
I'll get it from the website. They have it on, I mean, they have the book, the cover of the book. They have it on, what is it, which are the ones that sell books and DVDs?
No. I'm talking about our website, Bill. Please.
I am going to get the picture from the web. If Greg has one that he wants me to put on there, I'll put it on.
All right, let's get that done. Now, here's the big question. What's the story with Gimlin? How come he's kept quiet all this time? How come you try to go see the guy and he vanishes and he doesn't want to talk except for a very special few? And now he's coming out, I understand, giving talks all over to these Bigfoot forums and these conventions.
Well, if you're asking me, Tom, it's a little money-making operation for Gimlin.
Yeah, I know. And you and I both know this. We've talked about it before.
Here's
the big question that I'm going to leave with you that I opened the show with. What's going to happen to these culprits, these people, these PhDs and scientists, anthropologists, self-proclaimed cryptozoologists who rode this gravy train for 45 years that are teaching our children? What's going to happen to people like that?
Well, you know, you hope that ultimately they will be shunned from the scientific community, certainly the Bigfoot community. I'm not certain how much of the scientific community respects Bigfoot research, but the Bigfoot field, if it ever wants to make advances, needs to clean house. It needs to get rid of this film and remove from its ranks any hoaxers, any records of hoaxing, expose it, document it, show the public what it is, and move on and try different techniques or methods to prove the existence of Bigfoot to the world's satisfaction. Ultimately, it does mean, in my opinion, a capture or a kill. But I'll leave it up to the Bigfoot community to provide the necessary proof. But that's what needs to happen. There needs to be a cleansing of the Bigfoot community. They need to start over.
You're a great guy, Greg. God bless you. Mute yourself out. There's a whole lot more to show. I'm sure you want to listen, and thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Long, this guy is such a super, super guy. And, boy, did he do his due diligence and his work over a course of 4 years. Without any further ado, we're going to get out there to the Carolinas. We're going to talk to my good buddy. This is the guy, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, 2008, when I had those two clowns from Georgia, calls me up that night at 7 p.m. and says, "Hey, Tom," he says, "I don't want you to get hurt, good buddy." He says, "That's my friend made that suit." And then I was at having dinner with those two clowns, ladies and gentlemen, Dyer and Witten, and I gave the phone to him, and he'll remember this story, I'm sure. And I said, "Well, tell these guys that." And that's the thing that tipped my hand, in which I had my team. I excused myself after I hung up from Phil, and I had them go put that turbo heater on that block of ice to see exactly what we had. Good evening, Phil. You out there?
Certainly, certainly. Good to hear from you.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
You know, I got to tell you, no matter if it's, ladies and gentlemen, this guy is a nocturnal creature himself. He loves to work late at night, and he has a million foot, square foot, one of them anyway, factory down there, warehouse, and when we were down there, me and my boys, and we filmed down there, he showed us all over the place. My God, it's just incredible, and boy, does everybody in the town know and love him.
Yeah, that's our distribution center, and we've turned into, without doubt, the largest costumer in the world.
You are the largest now. Congratulations, yeah. Brother. Congratulations. Well, you heard Greg. Pretty astute man, and he really did his homework, don't you think?
He certainly is, and I love the guy. He's done a lot of work on this, and he a lot of hard work on this to find out all the ins and outs and how it happened that they ended up with this costume. I ran an ad in Amusement Business, which is a trade magazine, and I received a telephone call from Roger Patterson. He introduced himself, and he said, "I said, are you a magician? You want a gorilla suit?" And he said, "No." Yeah, he said, "I'm just a rodeo cowboy." And I said, what are you going to do with it? Well, I'm just going to play a joke on some people. And he said, how much is the suit? Well, back then I was selling the suit on sale for...
Excuse me, Phil, you're going to have to talk into the mouthpiece a little louder, please.
Okay, I was selling the suit on sale for $435 plus the shipping. And he said, well, do this. He says, I'm not sure that I can use this suit. He said, why don't you send me the suit, and if I can use it, I'll keep it. If I can't, I'll send it back to you. But if I'm going to keep it, I'll send you a check. And I thought about that for about 2 seconds. And I said, here's what you do. I said, you go ahead and send me, not a check, you send me a money order for the cost of the costume and the shipping. I'll send you the suit. Now, you'll have 2 or 3 days to look at the suit, and if you can't use it, pack it back up and send it back to me. And I'll hold on to your money order until that happens. And, of course, I never heard from him once it was – actually, I never heard from him at all for about 2 months. And the reason for that is that it took him that long to go around and con all these people that Greg was telling you about in Yakima to con the money out of them in order to have enough money to send for the costume. Now, it wasn't until about, maybe 2 months later, I'm sitting in my living room, and the announcer comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, the most amazing thing. These two cowboys were out in the National Forest, and they saw this creature, and they happened to have a camera with them. And look at this, a prehistoric animal alive walking through the forest. Well, I saw it. My wife was in the kitchen, and I yelled at her, because back then the business was in our home. And she came running in the room and says, what is it? I said, well, look. She says, oh, look, that's a gorilla suit. But it really fooled millions and millions of people. Even to today, there are people who still believe that was a real Bigfoot.
Well, you're exactly right. Until they get off that large high, and in that, what the hell is it, ether. Everybody gets in that ether, you know, because they're all thinking, oh, but they don't look closely at the pads on the foot, or on the hand as he comes around, or is that little wrinkle in the suit by where its belt is in his midriff, okay? People don't look at that. Because you know why? They've got all these PhDs and scientists that have looked at it, dissected it frame by frame, and they come out to the conclusion, oh, no, it's a real deal. Now I know why it's a real deal, Phil.
Well,
they've been on this money train for 45 years, and
Roger
it's made them, I guess, very healthy, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Roger Patterson called me back after he received the suit. He said, listen, I have several questions about this. He said, first of all, he said, I want this to look massive so you can see the muscles underneath. And I said, well, here's what you do. The first thing you do is go over to the high school, find the football coach, and ask him if you can use one of his football shoulder pads. Now, the football shoulder pads back then were all made out of plastic. They're not made that way anymore, but I have several here that from that period. And once it was underneath and the costume was over the top of it, as it moved, the outside lining would slide back and forth, which made it look like there was muscles underneath. The next thing was, he said, the arms aren't long enough. And I said, well, listen, the hands I sent you had a real long wrist on them. So you just run the hand down. Now, the shoulder on top, the football shoulder pad is going to give you some of the height. And then from your elbow down, I said, you move your hand down, just hold on to the wrist in the hands, and it will look like like the arms are like a monkey's and so forth. Numerous other things with it, but he made a couple changes in the suit. They cut the face out and replaced the face. And Bob Hieronymus will tell you, who wore the suit, bless his heart, has one glass eye, and it's the glass because Patterson had no idea of technology how to make the mask so it would match the person's eyes who were wearing it. So they took a glass eye, and on the side that you see of the Bigfoot walking through the forest, you see the glass eye in there.
Well, you actually see that because of the glistening of the sun onto the eye. Isn't that correct?
there's one moment in the film where you see the sun glisten off of that.
That's it. That's exactly
Absolutely.
It. Now, you know, Phil, throughout the years, you know, we've met each other. We've broken bread. God bless you. Your hospitality has been wonderful. We came out there and we had some of that Southern hospitality barbecue with you, me and my boys. You know, I get a little irritated. I got a call today from some people after they've seen the trailer, and they said, oh, well, that guy, Phil Morris, he's inconsistent with his stories. I said, what are you talking about, he's inconsistent? Every time I've ever talked to him, he's always said the same story. And then, of course, they always come up with the same stuff. Well, where's the receipt? Well, then I turned back to them, and I says, well, how old are you? He says, I'm 60 years old. I said, great. I says, can you do me a favor? Do you remember what you bought 40 years ago, and do you still have a receipt for it? And they come silent. Why is that?
Well, you hit it right on the head. As I said, we are the largest costumer in the world. During the Halloween season, we have as many as 300 people in our shipping department alone working here. And if you can imagine, if we had receipts for, and this was long before computers, this was long before copy machines, even when Patterson bought that suit from us. So it would be, but still would be impossible. It would have to be an entire warehouse of just receipts. So, but I have, of course, all the information, and you are absolutely correct. Every time that I've told a story about Bigfoot, it's very same, the very same.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I can't wait until this movie comes out. It's a long time coming. You've heard all the stories on radio. You've seen it in print. Nobody has ever put it together in film form with the existing surviving people that are still alive to tell the story, and we've got it. You're a part of it, and God bless you for that, my brother. And you know what? Your other brethren's coming on. Just mute yourself out. Bob Hieronymus is next.
Thank you.
God bless you. Take care of yourself. We'll talk soon.
Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Phil Morris. What a swell guy. You know, those of you people who are under 40, you probably don't know what that word swell means. Swell means a great guy, a stand-up guy, a guy old school like myself. He shakes your hand, you take it to the bank. He's a real guy, like the rest of these people that we're going to be having on here. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we're going back up to Washington and talk to another great guy, a guy that wasn't afraid of getting ridiculed, and boy, has he, like myself, Bob Hieronymus. Bob, you out there?
Yes, I am, Tom.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Well, hell of a show so far, huh?
Pretty good show, you betcha.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I had this show because of the trailer that's come out, and as you see, it's tells the truth. And it's going to be a lot of stuff in here that's going to get a lot of people's goats. And they're going to get angry. But that's what happens when you tell the truth, okay? People
right.
get angry. Because that flow of money, that stream of financial security that they had going on for 45 years is going to stop, don't you think, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the main questions. I've been getting inundated with these emails and phone calls. Is, well, how come Hieronymus came out 35 years later? Why did he? I says, well, if you listen to him in the movie there, he gave his word, didn't he? He was a man of his word. But then when he got to thinking about it, he never got paid his $1,000 for wearing that suit, number one. Number two, that you were neighbors of his, along with Gimlin and Vilma. And, oh, my gosh, he's making all this money. His widow's making all this money. The Hinden's family's making all this money. And what did you get?
I got nothing.
You got nothing.
That's right.
Okay. So, you think about retribution should be made about now after 45 years come this October?
Well, if I charged interest all these years, it'd make a pretty good chunk, wouldn't you think?
Oh, I think you'd be. He'd have to sell his ranch that he didn't have. Why don't you be kind enough, Bob, to tell my listeners around the globe the story, how he contacted you, and we'll take it from there bit by bit.
Okay. I ran around with Bob Gimlin a little bit. We rode horses, broke some horses together. And he and Roger were good friends. And Roger cooked this hoax up and asked Gimlin, you know, who could we get to wear the suit? Had to be a big, strong guy. I was 6 foot one, right around 200 and some pounds. And we needed somebody that we could trust. Well, Gimlin said, well, Bob Hieronymus would be the guy to contact. So Bob asked me if I would do it, and I said, yeah. So I went up there to where Roger lived on the South Fork of the Atanum, and he had the suit in a little shed there, and of course he had modified the suit a little bit on the face and stuff. And I tried the suit on, and he told me how he wanted me to walk. And of course everybody says I walk that way anyway, naturally, but I walked up and down the pasture there three or four times, and Roger finally said, that's perfect, that's just the way we want it. So from then on, they took off, stopped and got one of my horses to take to California, and they went on down there, him and Bob, and I was supposed to come down a few days later and meet him down there. So I drove all the way from here to California and met him at a service station, and we went on up to Bluff Creek there where they had a campsite made out and picked out a place to do the filming. And I put the suit on. We packed it up there on the back of horses, the suit and me and the two other guys, Roger and Bob. And I put the suit on and walked down through there. It took about maybe 15 minutes for the whole thing. I came back to the camp the next morning. That afternoon, I took off, and Roger gave me the film. It was in a box, and it was supposed to be mailed to Al D'Atley. So I had to take it clear to Eureka, California, to a post office to mail it. And they put the suit in the trunk of my car because they didn't want to be seen when they announced it down there at Willow Creek, down that area down there. They didn't want to, you know, somebody stumbling onto that suit in the back of their truck or up in the horse bed there anywhere. So they put the suit in the trunk of the car. I come home and actually probably beat the package home myself. But and then I got home that night. Well, I showed us the suit to some of my friends. I said, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but just take a look at it and don't forget what it looks like. So I come home, and the next day or so, here they came. They dropped my horse off.
Pardon? When did Mom open up the trunk to see that?
After I got back with the suit.
That was the next day?
Yeah, she was going to go to the store or something to show them up the trunk, and there was this suit staring at her. So.
Right, which Mom is in his mom, ladies and gentlemen, is in the movie. Now, who's the other guy was his name Bun or Bud?
Bernard Bun Hammermeister? Yeah, he saw the suit.
Yeah, he was the one he's in the film also.
Oh, he is?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because he attested to the whole thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was one of the guys that saw the suit.
How do you spell his first name?
His name is Bernard, but everybody calls him Bun.
Okay, that's it. That's what we were looking for. Fantastic. Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I thought that was very apropos to put that in right then.
Anyway, they dropped my horse off, got the suit out of the truck or car, and that's the last I saw of the suit.
Okay. So as of all these years, did you ever contact him and say, hey, where's my money?
I did. I bounced Al D'Atley one time, and he said, I said, well, am I ever going to get paid? And he said, well, that's between you and Roger. Well, I'd seen Roger once or twice, and he, of course, didn't have the money. So, you know, after all those years, I just kind of let it go, you know. But when I saw the world's greatest hoaxes 35 years later on television, I said, it's time people need to know the truth that film was a hoax.
Yeah. Well, the thing I love is when you say, all the people needed to do was come up there to Yakima, to Washington, and just ask the people there, and they would have told you who Bigfoot was.
Yeah, there was hundreds of them around here that knew it the week the film came out. Some of them even before.
That all knew it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, let me ask you this. There's a lot of people that don't know this. Why don't you tell the listeners out there right now, how many lie detector tests did you take, polygraph tests, and how many did you pass?
I took two lie detector tests, one here at Yakima Police Department, and this F. Lee Bailey used to have a show on TV about called Lie Detector.
Right.
The famous, I guess he was an attorney.
Uh-huh.
Had a show, used to have a show called Lie Detector. Well, they called me up. This was after he was off there. But they called me up and flew me down there to Santa Monica, California. And, of course, I showed him the Bigfoot walk. And then I took a lie detector from a guy named, I don't know, Ed Gilp or somebody like that. And I passed both those naturally.
See, people don't realize that. But then I've been getting calls and emails, as you know, because of the trailer we've got out there. Well, I listened to Bob Hieronymus on a couple of shows, and he's been inconsistent, too. His stories never, they waffle back and forth.
After 45 years, you know, I'm supposed to remember where I stopped to take a look at a rest stop or something like that, you know?
Yeah. You know, you know what we're getting now? That, oh, there was other people that were in that suit besides you. Have you heard that?
They may have been, but it was I was the first man to wear the suit, and somebody may have worn it after I'd come back, after I brought the suit back. I don't know.
But unequivocally, that's you in that picture up Bluff Creek.
That's me, yes.
Bob, let them all see the movie, because we're whetting their appetite right now, I'll guarantee you. And there's so much that's going to come out. God bless you. Just mute yourself out. There's a whole lot more to show. You'll like to hear this. And thank you so much, and say hello to Glenda.
Okay. Thank you for having me on your show.
God bless you, my brother.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Hieronymus. The people that everybody said, oh, this is bullshit, and this is this, and this is that. He's real. Passed the lie detector test twice. Not once, twice. Remember that, okay? Now, without any further ado, let's get down there to Kentucky to talk to our good brethren, Leroy Blevins. Leroy, you out there?
Yeah, I'm here, Tom.
Well, what do you think of the show so far, son?
Oh, that's great.
Pretty incredible, isn't it? You're hearing it firsthand, ladies and gentlemen, around the globe, the people that you're going to see in this movie. It's never been done before. John L. Johnson and myself are doing it. It'll be out before you know it. But I'm going to tell you, it's going to shock the world. So get ready. And all you people that have been on that money train, that buckle up for safety now, because there'll be people after your ass, I'll guarantee it. I've been in the hot seat long enough for nothing. You're going to be in a hot seat for something when this is all over with, I'll guarantee you. They'll come after your ass. Leroy, tell the listeners out there about the feet. We got it on the websites, ladies and gentlemen. Go to BigfootLive.com, and you'll see he's got one, two, three, four different videos up there. Shows the footprints, shows the handprints, all that kind of stuff that goes along with it. Explain to the people about the prints that were there at Bluff Creek. Where'd they come from?
From either John Green, Rainey DeHinden, Roger Patterson, Bob Gimlin. Because that's when they started making the prints up through there. Because actually, when people's looking at the film, they're looking at the one film, the PG film, but actually it was three films there, which was a tracking dog film, the PG film, and Jim McLaren doing the Bigfoot walk, well, the path of the Bigfoot, which was actually filmed before they filmed the Bigfoot.
Now, that's the whole point. People don't realize this, okay? When they see the PG film, they're thinking that that's the only thing. That's the Holy Grail, okay, which we know is not true. Now, there was the dog part, and then there was the other ones with the McLaren, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there was three Bigfoot films made with this same suit. Is that correct?
Yes. And
okay.
Now,
from what period to what period do you think this all took place? Time-wise?
During Labor Day weekend is when they first filmed the first two films. And that's a tracking dog film and Jim McLaren doing the Bigfoot walk, you know, the path of Bigfoot. Because he was actually was the man in the suit, because when I wrote Jim McLaren and I said, hey, was you the man in the suit too? He says, no, but he says, I am very impressed with the research you have done.
Okay. All right. So tell me about where Ray Wallace comes in on this thing.
The feet and the tracks. The feet on the Bigfoot suit was Ray Wallace's shoes.
So the actual feet that we've all come to see and find out that they were bogus, that was outed on this man's deathbed, Ray Wallace, was the actual footprints, the foot and the toes that we saw on the PG film. Is that correct?
Yes. Because his shoes match up perfectly to the left and right foot of the Bigfoot in the film.
So what I just said is correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hold that thought. We've been going on here, and I forgot to pay some bills. Let's go to commercial, Bill.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And it's back to you, Tom.
Thanks, Bill. Leroy, I got to tell you, I see your work, I guess, every month out of the year and the different projects that you work on, but I got to tell you, my friend, what you've done to this PG film has been incredible. By connecting the dots, by outing these people, okay, it just blows me away. The John Green, the Rene DeHinden, who's the other guy, Titmus?
Yeah, Bob Titmus.
Bob Titmus. Yeah. And then, of course, there's Patterson and Gimlin.
Mm-hmm. And Jim McLaren.
And Jim McLaren. There was a bunch of people that was involved in this whole thing. Now I understand why that when it came, push came to shove, when the smoke cleared on this whole deal, there was two people who partnered up with the money here. And that was Rene DeHinden's family and Patty Patterson. They're the two people that shared in all of the profits. It's just amazing. Let me ask you, before we go on to my next guest, because we really ran late today, tell me about the buckle in the midriff there.
What do you mean?
Well, that you can actually see in the film when the creature's walking. It looks like a belt or something. And by
that's where the strap came between legs, because, you know, as you notice, I made a copy of the suit. And there's a strap that comes in between the legs and hooks up in the front.
Okay. So the one that we're seeing in the suit is the one that's actually Hieronymus's belt buckle?
Well, when we're looking at the film today, okay, Bob Hieronymus is the man in the suit in the first part, because there's actually two parts of the walk of the Bigfoot there. There's two sequences there.
Uh-huh.
Bob Hieronymus was the man in the suit in the first walk sequence, but in the second walk sequence, that's why they did not pay Bob Hieronymus, because they used another man in another suit, which was taller. That's why if you measure both films, if you take the first section of the walk and the second section of the walk, you'll see that one Bigfoot is actually 5 inches taller than the other one.
So do we know that as a fact, that this other gentleman is 6'6"?
Yes.
Okay.
Because, see, that's why M.K. Davis was confused about, hey, there's two Bigfoots here, you know, because that's why everybody was confused about the height of the Bigfoot. Because in the original one, they only showed it 30 seconds of film. But then after Ron Olson took over the film, remade it for Roger Patterson, he had that first walk sequence back into it, because they never did the first walk sequence twice. They only did the complete walk sequence two times, one with Bob Hieronymus in a suit, and the second time with, well, actually lines up with Jim McLaren, because when I studied John Green's film, which was also filmed with the same camera as Roger Patterson used to film his film, you can see that it lines up perfectly with him.
Totally amazing. Totally amazing. Listen, I just can't wait till this whole thing is put together, and it's when we're getting very close right now. And of course, your copy will be sent out to you as promised. Thank you so much for all you've done and been to us. It means an awful lot to me. You know that.
Oh yes.
All right, listen. Just mute yourself out. We got a whole lot more show. Okay.
Okay, Tom.
Thanks, good buddy.
Bye, bud.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can see Leroy's work on BigfootLive.com. The links are all there. You might want to take a look at it. It will blow your mind like it did us. Without any further ado, I want to get back out there to Ohio. Not only a business partner, associate, I can actually call him my friend. Mark Bosco, you out there?
Yes, I am, Tom. How you doing?
Mark, after hearing what you've heard so far, what's going on in your head, son?
Well, if I wasn't already 100% convinced that this is going to really just, you know, change everything, be, you know, a real game changer with regard to documentaries, reality programming, opening people's eyes after, you know, the testimony I've just listened to for the last 50 minutes, you know, I'm 199% convinced now. It's stunning. You made a comment at the beginning of the show that was really vital, I think. You said anybody who's ever searched for Bigfoot has been hoaxed, and that really hit home because I'm in that age group, as are you know, many of my friends, people I work with, etc., that grew up believing this and becoming interested in this whole side of the world, even if it's not our main industry, but just as part of our culture because of those films. And all of a sudden, Tom Viscardi's created something that's going to change literally our culture. And I think that's probably what the key is, and that's what's so important about this project. That's why it's going to be such a big deal when it gets out to the general audiences.
You know, I applaud you. I've always said this to you over our tenure of the last 5 years, your tenacity, your forthrightness, your contacts in the industry, and I know that the tidbits that you put out on this to the executives and the networks and everything, and I know they're all chomping at the bit to see this damn thing, and I know that we've got a lot of roads to go down here and really analyze and which way we're going to make this the best for everybody involved. But give me a small paragraph on what you think, besides it changing the world and the way it thinks about Bigfoot. How do you think this movie is going to be received by the general public?
Well, I think people are going to be very hungry for it, and just it's going to be wild. It really will be, because all of a sudden you have this product that was created by somebody who has spent their whole life based and triggered by something they saw, and it led them to a whole a way of life, creating businesses, associations, searching, you know, all the things that you've done, all the organizations you've created, all the people you've helped and inspired, and everybody, literally everyone in the worldwide, you know, over the age of 12, has had some exposure to Bigfoot. Here comes a film that's going to say everything you thought about that is pretty much patently false if you've believed it based on this clip, this iconic clip that has been part of the worldwide conscious for the past 45 years. So people are going to say, I have to see that, because that's like saying any other iconic piece of footage is, here's a film that's going to prove that out as wrong. So whether it's, you know, something like the Kennedy assassination, for example, very iconic clip that everybody can relate to. It's instantaneous. If somebody says Kennedy assassination, we all know the clip of film they're going to show. If somebody says Bigfoot, we all know the clip of film they're going to show. Now all of a sudden that's fake. How do you respond as a society to that? How does somebody personally relate to all of a sudden changing their whole history of thought? So, you know, you just mentioned that the people who put these films into distribution, the cable TV executives, the DVD folks, the on-demand folks, the VOD, digital delivery, iTunes, Netflix, Amazon, all those worlds, I mean, they're going to go nuts to make this available to the public, and I think it'll be rightfully so, because the public's going to want to get a hold of this very badly.
You know, Mark, I love you. I know it's late out there by where you're at. Thank you for staying up. We're going to talk to John right now. You might want to stay up for another 5 or 6 minutes. We're going to have him on. I'll see you real soon. I'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless you. Thanks for being with us.
Take care, Tom.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's one of our business associates. I call him like a brother from another mother, Mark Bosco from out there in Ohio. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I want to get out here to Florida here where I'm at, talk to my newfound brethren, John L. Johnson. John, you out there?
Yes, I am.
Well, John, when you heard them collectively tonight, what do you think?
I was hoping that everybody out there who's got an interest in this film, a good, solid, constructive interest in this film, was listening. I tried to spread the word as much as I could, because this is going to be one of the only times that you're going to be able to hear all these players on the same platform. You know, we're all getting older as we go on here, and we're losing these people, and you know, this is going to be an opportunity for people to hear us all together. Now, I'm sure that it's going to be archived, and I would recommend that anybody who's listening, who knows somebody who didn't make it, tell them to get the archive. I thought that it was amazing to hear Philip Morris, because this is the guy who, this guy's responsible for this mess, in effect. I'm just kind of awestruck.
Okay, well, here's what I need for you to do. I've been getting these emails, and they're saying to me, hey, Tom, you know, you hooked up with John L. Johnson, and you think an awful lot of him. Why don't you ask him tonight on the show, how come when he was making films with M.K. Davis that he thought so highly of the film, and that, A, that supposedly there was multiple creatures out there in some kind of a massacre. So I told these people, I wrote back and said, you bet. I said, I'll bring it up, and I'm sure that he'll have the righteousness to come forth and tell you the exact answer. Can you address that?
Sure. I have a great deal of respect for MK, and there are no experts in this field. He will be one of the first people to admit that. And I always told him, I like the man as a friend, and I've been to his home half a dozen times or more. And we've been on the road together to other places. I told him that I will support anything that he shows me that I can verify with what I know about photography. Now, that goes back to the mid-1970s. I've been a working freelance photographer since Christ was an altar boy, and I retired a few years ago to pursue documentaries. This whole Bigfoot thing's an accident. But at any rate, after making the first film and MK was in it, I was very intrigued by the way he broke down the film and looked at it, so I continued to stay in touch with him. When he made the announcement that he thought that the Patterson-Gimlin creature was human, he was distributing clips on the web, which at the time we were in a transition point in computers between CRT monitors and the LCD screens, and the early LCD screens were garbage. They didn't hold the resolution like the CRTs did. And I said, man, you need to do something to level a playing field, and he agreed to put this thing on DVD so at least the quality was consistent when it came into the people's homes. I have to tell you that I paid Patricia Patterson for that, even though at that time I had done my homework and found out that the Patterson-Gimlin film, and this you can take to the bank, is squarely in the public domain. You can use it as you please, whenever you want. Modify it, do whatever you want. No one's ever going to get sued for that because of the copyright laws that were in force at the time it was made and the fact that when the copyright laws changed in 1977, nothing was grandfathered in. So it's still under the same old rules it ever was. So it's simply in the public domain. And you can thank Roger Patterson and John Green for that. Davis was showing me things that I took a great deal of scrutiny with. There were things that we argued about. There were things that I didn't see that he could see. But once he would send me the clip, the degradation, JPEG degradation or the transmission degradation, I couldn't see it. And so we would call this stuff, and some of it would just hit the cutting room floor. And I stayed with him up until the massacre theory, and I started getting somewhat incredulous. Now, I do know that you can get an awful lot of detail off this film because people don't realize that a 35-millimeter film frame is roughly the size of two postage stamps side by side. And yet you get that displayed on a wall, the size of a landing strip at a theater. So, there's a lot more resolution in film. But what you also had in that was copying artifacts. You had a lot of dirt. There was a lot of dirt. And these things would show up in places that would look like other things. And the grain and some of the stuff was inconsistent. The film has a very poor, if almost unintelligible, chain of custody. We don't know where this thing, we don't know who shot it, we don't know where it was shot, and what I'm going to speculate on that in a minute for you is probably going to blow this whole timeline thing out of the water, but not necessarily in a good way. But when MK started talking about having independent people look at it and verifying the color, I started to drift from him because I've always said, and I'll say it again, that wherever the evidence takes me, that's where I'm going to go. And I don't care if I'm right up next to espousing a theory and somebody comes along and shows me something that will change that. As long as I believe in that over the evidence that I've seen before, I'm going to go with it. The color thing with the water. the red in the water. I was very skeptical about that. I was very skeptical about that. He even went to the point where he said he had an optical physicist say that the color that he was showing him was there. Well, that doesn't take a rocket scientist. And an optical physicist is not necessarily a guy who deals in colors. An optical physicist can design lenses so that they will see colors properly. But he's not necessarily a color analyst. Now, that may be part of his job, but to state that that was flat-out true was wrong on that man's part. I'm not going to name him here. He's been on a lot of shows, and I don't want to put a thorn in his side. But the copy of the film that I got used to belong to John Eric Beckyard, and it was copied properly, digitally, frame by frame, on a machine in a video production studio. And those of you who know that my son owns a production studio know it was not his.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, but did you know where Beckyard got that film?
No, I don't. And I've always wondered why he got it. I think he finagled a copy of it out of De Hinden. But
no.
That color on that film is absolutely true. The sand at Bluff Creek is gray.
Okay, but here's the deal. Here's how I got the story. The story was that he went to pick that thing up for John Green, okay, but never returned it to him.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that at all, because Beckyard was one oddball guy. But if
well,
you
I'll tell you this.
I've got from,
you find out the players that are involved in this thing, as you and I have found,
oh,
it
yeah,
is just totally
yeah.
blown
there's
my
a,
mind.
There's a laundry list of these people that people have never heard of.
Exactly.
The colors in Beckyard's film are true. And when I put those film, and like the color you see of the paddy walk in our trailer, those are true colors. And the you put that next to the clips that MK was showing, like the tracking dog film, the copy he had, I've got all of that in true color. And it's you can tell that the film has been tainted. It's been tainted with poor processing.
No, John, I got to tell you, I get excited when you and I start talking about this, of course, and it goes on for hours. But in the beginning, I never knew that there were three films. Okay, I always thought it was the PG film, the Patterson-Gimlin film, not knowing that Jim McLaren had a part in this, who did a film, and of course, Bob Titmuss also. You know,
well, Bob
there was
wasn't
three
much
films
of it.
Actually here, right?
Who? What was that?
Do you understand about the three films being out there one way or another?
The three films are just separate sections of the film as a whole that was being shot under the auspices of Ron Olson and American National Entertainment.
Correct.
And that's where this whole Kodachrome myth came about. The film was never shot on Kodachrome. These people are not lying about the timeline for the film, because the film was shot on, had to be, if it was shot under the auspices of Ron Olson, Olson was not going to let Patterson go out in the field with Kodachrome film. That is a professional cinematographer's nightmare, and for processing. What he had was a 5200 series cinematographer's film that could be handled in a rush process, just like news cinematographers were doing, so they could take it in. And Leroy failed to mention, and he does say in the film, that he found the lab to process the film. And it was a rush lab used for cinematographers. They turned the thing around. They made a what's known as a rush or a daily, and they rushed this thing back. You could get those things back in a few hours if you stood in the lobby and waited for them. So it was not shot on Kodachrome. It was reprinted by Ron Olson on Kodachrome, and that Kodachrome copy became the original camera footage for most of these people. But I'll guarantee you it was not. And as far as John Green, I think John Green, in the beginning, was duped by these people. This tracking dog film that they talk about, I've got it. I've talked to Keith Cesari, the pilot. Keith is the guy who everybody thinks in that film is Bob Titmuss. Keith carried the rifle so Rene De Hinden could film. And all of this bunk about his widow identifying him. Either she was very, very mistaken, or that's just simply misinformation. Because Keith contacted me, and we've become, talking back and forth, and I've got short pieces of an interview I did on Skype with him. He's the guy that flew these people in there, and he walked around with that gun so DeHinden could film. Rene DeHinden took that tracking dog film.
Well, now, we don't want to tell people too much.
All of this stuff has just gone on and on and on, and I've got the film in its entirety with the credits from A&E at the front, and all of this stuff spliced in. Some of it is missing. The paddy walk is missing, but, this is – and I've got a picture of the cast and crew that was supposed to be in it, and guess who's in it? Mr. Bob Gimlin in a wig.
You know what? Now, here's the big question, okay? Here's the big question to you, Johnny, okay? Here are these cowboys are out there riding on their horses, out there looking for Bigfoot or whatever they were doing, and then – just happened to have this highfalutin movie camera in their saddlebag.
Yeah, this was a Kodak K100 three-lens turret, and it was a heavy dude. And you don't drop a film cartridge into a 16-millimeter camera. I don't think that there was – there may have been one or two that tried it, but Kodak Bolu and the other pros cameras, they – You had to load those things in a dark room. Now, this thing has really grown legs and walking around on its own over the years. Patterson, let me tell you, he may be a crafty guy, but I don't think that he's going to carry a 16-millimeter camera out there in the field without some extensive help. You just didn't do that. I believe at that time you were able to get in the late 60s, you had cartridge Super 8 and 8mm, and that would have been my choice. But if you're working with a film company, they're going to give you 16mm, and they're going to load it for you. And there's just so much. There's so much going on with this thing. I've got a piece in the film where I explain much of this, and it's unbelievable. And you can tell these people to their face and show them all of this, and they'll call you and everybody in the film a liar and swear that it's real. And for the life of me, I don't get it. And I think I told you that one time I was considering seeking out a psychologist to do an interview with about this sort of thing, because I've encountered so many people that, they talk to Bigfoot in their mind, they see them coming out of flying saucers, blah, blah, blah. And yet, one of the craziest people I ever met in the field who saw Bigfoot and heard Bigfoot in every sound and every little bump was a psychologist.
Jesus. All right, listen, I think we gave them enough information. Now they'll see it in the movie. Ladies and gentlemen, to all my guests, Greg Long, Phil Morris, Bob Hieronymus, Leroy Blevins, Mark Bosco, of course you, Johnny, see you in a little bit. Till next time, America, kudos and salutations.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster facing mysteries, legend, tales, and facts.